These guys know sports.
Most of the time.
Bob and Chris, the voices of Boise State Athletics. Bob Beeler and Chris Lewis on Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 AM, The Ticket. This hour is brought to you by Pro-Am Sports, your full-service pro shop and bowling specialist with high-quality bowling balls, bags, shoes, and all accessories. Located right inside Westie's Garden Lanes in Garden City.
Bob and Chris show. It is a Tuesday. Rick Worthington sitting in for Chris. Chris will be back tomorrow on his trip to the East Coast. And we've been following the last, well, I don't know how many months, maybe even over a year, the allegations going on at Baylor. Several reports, Washington Post, Sports Illustrated, that the Baylor Board of Trustees, or Board of Regents, I guess is the correct term there, are going to basically blame Ken Starr, the president chancellor, and fire him. The Bruce Feldman of Fox is reporting that that's not going to go down until about June 3rd because of meetings at Baylor, and they want to wait for the full report from the investigators they hired. But Baylor, it appears now, Rick, at least is going to do something.
So here's one of the things you have to know, whether you're a Republican or a Democrat or you're Baptist or an atheist or Mormon or anything else. Anytime somebody takes the moral high ground and then gets caught doing something dumb, everybody kind of likes to point and laugh at that. And Kenneth Starr took the moral high ground in one of the most public cases we've seen in American history, the Clinton administration investigation into his affair with Monica Lewinsky back in the day. Yeah, that Kenneth Starr. He's the guy that was the Baylor president. And for whatever reason, now he got his hand caught in the cookie jar, and the whole sexual assault scandal that was involving the school and its football team, the more that I've read about it, the more I understand why you would have to fire him. But I think the bigger question, the bigger overall question, is not, you know, whether we're pointing and laughing at Kenneth Starr, which clearly people are going to do. The bigger question is, how is it going to affect the football program now? Because when it starts at the top, it usually starts rolling down after that. So when is the next shoe going to drop? Who's the next guy to get fired? Who's the next five guys to get fired? This is not a one-guy firing.
Well, athletic director Ian McCaw has come under some criticism, not as much as either Starr
as he should,
or Art Briles.
He should.
And he has been named in a suit by one of the women. They've also named head coach Art Briles. One source, Horn's Digest, seems to be one on the leading edge of the reporting, said that they think that it would be difficult to fill their football stadium, and this is Horn's Digest saying it, if, quoting, I should say, somebody close to Baylor, if Briles were fired. Well, I'm sorry, there are other people that can coach. There are other people that you could choose to lead your athletic department. There are other people you could choose to be the president of the university.
Mm-hmm.
I think if Baylor is not firing somebody because they think maybe the program's going to go down, that's the wrong reason and the wrong message to send.
And more than that, you really have to, number one, wonder, is this poor girl going to be okay? Who apparently was raped and then went through the proper steps to report what happened and was, you know, met with, you know, nothing but stop signs and roadblocks. So I'm trying to find her name. Is it Jasmine Hernandez?
Jasmine Hernandez.
You really shake your head and you just say, man, I hope she's okay. Mm-hmm. Number one, hope she's okay. And then, yeah, you hope that when something like that happens and people don't do anything about it, that they're held accountable for it. So, you know, Kenneth Starr, I think, is just the first of a number of dominoes that probably will fall here. And I hope they don't look at it in terms of football or athletically. Is this going to be okay for the program or the school? I hope they just clean house and kick some butts.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I hope happens. I got no problem with Baylor's football program for 10 years stinking because they didn't do the right thing and they were more worried about football than doing the right thing.
Well, and then, of course, Baylor cleaned house, I don't know, maybe 15 years ago with the whole Dave Bliss situation. He was the basketball coach there. And
man, I had forgotten about that.
You know, and they,
yeah,
there was a murder. A player got murdered.
Yeah.
I think by another one. And they basically tried to cover that up because they'd been paying one of the guys under the table. So
man,
I think that Baylor has had some issues over the years, But they were able to come back from that. Baylor's basketball program survived that. You've got to do the right thing. In the end, you've got to do the right thing. And I think maybe the biggest quote that I saw that they said that somebody had mentioned that the Regents were looking at, you know, Baylor is a private university. They make a lot of money on they're keeping their school in open by tuition, very expensive tuition.
Yes, it is.
You know, are they going to lose a lot of possible enrollees because of this? And the answer is probably yes. Missouri, with their issues last year on campus, their number of people that tried to get into Missouri dropped by a big percentage points from last year to this year's freshman class coming in. I think they ended up getting the same number of kids, but the number that applied to get into the school was way less. So I think that the Board of Regents, the Board of Trustees, the State Board of Education, whoever's running the various universities, they have to look at things for the entire university, and they have to look out and make sure their reputation as a place of higher learning stays.
Yeah, you know, one of the things you get when you bring me in here, Bob, is I want to be honest with you here for a minute. Because I do news all day long, I grow a little callous sometimes to just rotten people, all right? And in the news lately, there just been a lot of rotten people. And not just naming political figures, not naming just people that do bad things every day, and I get tired of talking about them. When I come in here and we do sports, I want to talk about fun things. And then we bring up something like this dummy in Texas that's running Baylor. I'm tired of people being jerks to each other.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so hard that in all avenues, you look at something that is so pure and fun and things that you can get excited about, and Baylor can't get their priorities straight, and it's a Baptist university. Get it straight, folks. You know, live your life right. And I know that, you know, here I am now taking the moral high ground. I'm saying I'm tired of people being jerks to each other. They should know at the top of that food chain. Kenneth Starr should know better. The head football coach should know better. The players should know better. And this poor girl that had the unthinkable happen to her goes and just gets met with roadblocks. I'm just tired of seeing things like this happen every day.
Well, I think a lot more is going to come down. I think the rumors that Ken Starr is out probably will end up being true in early June.
I think you're right.
And then the question is that it, or is there more to come? And then where do the lawsuits go from there? So we'll follow that story as we move on. We're coming to you from the Data Tales studios, Bob Beeler, along with Rick Worthington, sitting in for Chris Lewis today. Biggest story on the court, the field, et cetera, has to be the NBA.
Oh, yeah.
And both semifinals right now, starting to get interesting because they're starting to take turns that nobody saw coming. Everybody saw Golden State with their record 73 wins as this being a coronation for them to a repeat championship. They have their most important game of the year tonight. They are on the road, and they are down 2-1. If they go down 3-1, they will have to win all three games. Two of them would be in Oakland. One would be in Oklahoma City remaining. And then maybe the more unthinkable to me, can you imagine the Toronto Raptors winning the NBA championship? Toronto. There was not a Canadian team in the NHL Stanley Cup playoffs, and yet they could hoist the Larry O'Brien trophy. They have won the last two games by shooting 59% over Cleveland. They have been on fire. They are a team that has thrived on the home court. They are 8-2 at home in the playoffs. They are 2-6. Game 5 will be tomorrow in Cleveland.
Right.
They're going to have to win at least one in Cleveland if they want to advance.
Everybody can,
I never saw them getting this far.
Everybody can blame Dwayne Wade for shooting around during the national anthem, right? The Canadian national anthem. He just fired everybody up. It's Dwayne Wade's fault. The Toronto Raptors, by the way, folks, are a lot better than everybody wants to give them credit for. And I don't think until this point we kind of have figured out not only how good they are, but who their studs are. I mean, they're so good down low that could be their strength. But now they shoot so well from the outside that could be their strength. And they've learned how to rebound on top of that. They hustle. I really like where this team is at. The Toronto Raptors are for real. More than that, though, once again, LeBron can't do it by himself. I mean, Kyrie and Kevin Love, just please show up for the next game. Because they stunk so bad in the last game. We're like, 6 for 60 between them or something? Ridiculous. I don't know what the stat is. I'm just kind of yanking that out of the back of my hat here. But clearly, LeBron cannot carry this team on his own against a strong Toronto club like that. He's going to have to get some help.
And they used him an awful lot of minutes last night. I think he played 46 minutes last night. Didn't get anything out of Love. In fact, didn't use him down the stretch. Channing Frye shot them back into the game. And they got a brief lead late where they came back from 18 down. And you're thinking, all right, here they go. They're going to be up 3-1, or excuse me, 2-1.
Mm-hmm.
No, 3-1. Up 3-1 because it was 2-1 going into the game. And then all of a sudden, Toronto makes enough plays to never let Cleveland be ahead by more than a possession. And then Cleveland, who I thought at that point was just going to zoom by, win by 5 to 10 points, didn't do it. And Toronto is even now, two games apiece. And I think the league itself, from the TV standpoint, rating standpoint, is probably a little nervous that Cleveland may not get to the finals.
Let's just assume for a minute that the unthinkable happens. Let's just reflect on the idea that it would be Toronto against Oklahoma City, and that's your finals. And NBA ratings plummet to their all-time worst levels. Would anybody watch that? I mean, except for KD fans, there's no marquee player for the Raptors. That guy doesn't exist on that roster. And maybe it's Lowry, but he hasn't really stepped up and been that guy yet. So you've got KD and Westbrook that, you know, are the big two stars, but they preside in Oklahoma City where they've got like 12 fans going, come on, guys, let's go, get this, bring it home. You know, it's just, it'd be comedic to see David Stern shaking his head at home on his in his Barca lounge. You're just going, oh, what have we done?
Coming up next, the NFL is having meetings in Charlotte. We'll see what they're going to do with awarding a Super Bowl to maybe changing replay rules. That's next on the Bob and Chris Show with Rick Worthington sitting in on Sports Radio The Ticket.
You can be anyone you want on the commercial tired text line. Text us at 424-9300. Sports Radio The Ticket.
NFL meetings going on in Charlotte. They're going to award 3 Super Bowls, 19, 20, and 21. Houston and Minnesota have the next 2 Super Bowls coming up. Rick, it seems like you build a new stadium, you're going to get a Super Bowl. Minnesota's getting a new stadium. They're going to have a Super Bowl. Not next year, but the following season. So
that's a
smart
dome,
money
right?
On Atlanta. Oh, yeah, it's a dome. Smart money on Atlanta and L.A. with new stadiums getting Super Bowls, two out of the 3.
Good grief, yes. L.A.'s stadium will be gorgeous, and the NFL really wants to have a big game in a city like Los Angeles. They would love to do it in New York. You know, they want to have in that big metropolis, they want to have a game like that there. They would want to be in Chicago, but you just can't hold Super Bowls in cold weather cities. Especially when it's an outdoor venue. I mean, the fact that they're going to do it in Minnesota, yeah, I get it. They got a new stadium, and you're going to celebrate that, and you're going to help the ownership out and the fans there, and you're going to put a Super Bowl there. But good Lord, does anybody want to go to Minnesota in February?
Probably not.
Anyone? Even Vikings fans and Packers fans like Todd over here are like, oh, it's cold. I don't want to go there. Can we go to Miami, please? Can we go to San Diego? You know, let's do beaches and, you know, boat rides and things like that. Texas would be okay. Jerry's World's a great venue for a Super Bowl. Why don't you do it there?
Well, I think everybody wants it. Everybody wants to have a chance at it. And if you're a team in a cold weather place, you probably think it's a disadvantage to your pocketbook.
There's a lot of good reasons not to go to a cold weather.
Oh, and they were lucky in New York that it wasn't worse than it was.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, honestly, did you think they would have a Super Bowl in New York when they got the stadium there?
Did I think it was a good idea? No,
yeah.
I wouldn't have had it there.
I wouldn't have either.
I would say if you have a dome and you're in Minnesota and Detroit or whatever, I'll consider.
You'll sign off on dome, mm-hmm. but you'll not sign off as I, neither would I. You don't want to do a cold city venue for a Super Bowl.
If you're going to do that, then why not just let the best record host? And if the Packers have the best record, let Lambeau Field host that game.
Wouldn't that be the most miserable thing in the whole world?
Well, sometimes those AFC-NFC championship games are miserable.
Well, and they're a lot of fun to watch mm-hmm. at home, but I wouldn't want to pay $5,000 to go sit in the stadium and get frostbite. Look, it's hard enough to go to an NFL venue, no matter where you're going, and watch a football game. With the technology that's available, I mean, I'll take the 70-inch TV and watch at home and have somebody come in and do the food and, you know, have the kegerator going and have all my best friends over. I'll do that. I don't need to go freeze at an NFL venue just so I can see the game live.
Replay is also up. The Ravens with a proposal that's not going to go quite as far as they wanted. They wanted an extra challenge out of the deal. But they think it would be easier to have the reviews basically say what you can't review and anything else you can challenge. Because right now, a lot of times, they'll challenge something and then it'll come back, oh, you can't challenge that.
You can't challenge that, right.
They want no penalties to be reviewed. In other words, anything that's a judgment, holding, pass interference, illegal contact, illegal use of the hands, forcible contact, things like roughing the passer or hitting somebody, I guess, calling for a fair catch, and any unsportsmanlike penalties.
They don't want
to have any of those to have to be reviewed.
Okay. So far, I'm on board.
And then everything else can be reviewed.
Everything else can be reviewed.
Now, when it says not penalties, I wonder if they thought somebody was offsides. I'm guessing they probably wouldn't review that.
I don't think you can look at that and see if a man is offsides or not. That's supposed to be called by the line judge before the snap. I don't think you can review it. I could be wrong. I'm far from an expert on what you can and can't review, too. I mean, how many times have I sat and watched an NFL game and said, oh, that's totally a drop ball. You got to challenge that. Well, you can't challenge that. Like, really?
Well, and then the other thing, too, so many times you think something's going to go one way or the other, and you're like, oh, this is going to be an easy review. And then they come back with something, and it's like, no, it goes the other way.
I really don't like the rule that they implemented where a receiver who catches a ball has to have the ball all the way through the hitting the ground. I mean, you say the ground can't cause a fumble, but it also you can't use it to catch the ball. I get that. But if you make a catch and then hit the ground and the ball comes up, you've already made the catch.
Mm-hmm.
Made the catch 2 steps ago.
I think more times than not in the last 5 years, I've thought something was a catch that they've called no catch.
Yeah.
And I guess the one thing that I don't understand, you're trying to look at principles of a game. Why can I be standing outside the end zone and reach the ball across? It never gets in the end zone with my feet.
Yeah.
I never get into the end zone, and they call it a touchdown.
I think you're onto something there,
yet,
man.
It seems like the standard for catching the football is a lot harder at catching the ball in the end zone than it is to get the ball in the end zone when you're running from the field of play.
Don't even get me started on the tuck rule either. I mean, as a Raider fan, I'm here to tell you, that one still hurts, okay?
A couple of other things that I guess won't be discussed at the NFL meetings, but are sort of NFL stories. You mentioned the tuck rule, Tom Brady. Do people really care about him trying to appeal a 4-game suspension, maybe outside of New England? I mean,
yeah,
it seems like it's such a long time ago. You think people care of whether they uphold the suspension or rescind it?
I think, number one, people are upset that they're still appealing it. I mean, just somebody make a decision, please. Can we just have a decision and have that be the end of it? But this is how the legal system works, and you have to respect the legal system. But you appeal to one court, and they uphold the suspension. And then you go to another appeals court, and they say, no, it doesn't count. Then somebody else takes it to another appeals court, and, no, we don't want to do that, so we're going to go back to the appeals court that worked for us, and we want to make that work. It's ridiculous, and it's a lot of money that's being thrown around. I mean, here's who is making out on this. Anybody who's, you know, passed the bar exam, they're really liking this. And it also sets precedents for other things that will come in the NFL. I mean, the next time you see a suspension, there's going to be an appeals process. It could last 2 years.
I wonder if Brady doesn't want to just string it out, play another year, maybe play two, keep stretching it out, and then just retire.
Yeah. He might. Yeah, you could suspend me, but I retire. So take that, commissioner. He might. I could see him doing that. But honestly, I don't see the end right now for Brady. You remember how quick it happened for Peyton Manning?
Mm-hmm.
1 year he's thrown for 40 teeters and 5,000 yards, and the next he can't complete a pass. I mean, it happens pretty fast for quarterbacks. I wonder if it'll be that way for Tom Brady, too.
So far, it doesn't look like he's diminished that much.
But here's the thing. People care about it in NFL circles because, you know, if you're the Jets, you really care whether or not he plays against you that one game that you're going to get him during that suspension. Mm-hmm. If you're the Dolphins, yeah, you really care about that. And if you're another team in the AFC, even if you're not playing, you don't want to see Tom Brady and the Patriots in the playoffs. You know, especially you don't want to see them at Foxborough. So if not having him available for 4 weeks means you got a better chance at hosting a playoff game because they lost three of the four, that's better.
And then the last order of business for the NFL, Raiders looking for a home, flirting with Las Vegas. I know you're a big Raider guy. My question is, if you're Mark Davis, would you want the year to pass before making a commitment to Las Vegas? Because if the Chargers pass on L.A., you've got the second pick. You've got the second right of refusal on L.A. Would you rather be second team in L.A. or would you rather be first team in Las Vegas?
See, here's the thing. I don't think the Raiders are the second team if they go to Las Vegas. Or, I'm sorry, if they go to L.A. The Raiders still have a following in Los Angeles, unlike the Rams, who everybody wrote off. I mean, there are a few. Don't get me wrong. But the Raiders still own the television rights right now. They still owned a big piece of the television market in Los Angeles. And Mark Davis has said, I'm not giving that up. It's 25% of the revenue in the Oakland Raiders' pockets. And Mark Davis smartly said, I'm not giving that up, no matter who is in L.A. So he still owns that piece of the television market, as I understand, unless the NFL changed that. To go to Las Vegas does give him an opportunity to own that piece of the L.A. market and have his own place in the sexiest city in the country.
We opened the show talking about the stories out of Texas, reports coming that Baylor is going to be parting ways with Ken Starr as president or chancellor at the university. We have a commercial tire text line. You can reach us on the commercial tire text line at 424-9300. Fairly long text, so bear with me here. It says, I'm confused. Did a jury find him guilty of rape? If it did, did it throw the book at him? But so many made-up stories, i.e. Duke's lacrosse ruined a national championship team. The superstar athlete did 6 years for nothing. Ruined his life because another lie by a high school girl, Kobe. The Kobe rape, who had four or five samples. Patrick Kane made up a story. They made up a story against Patrick Kane. It's tough reading here with a lot of the different, comes on through four or five times. I have five more off the top of my head. All these discredits is disgusting to the actual victims of serious assaults.
There are several reports that Baylor has reportedly fired Kenneth Starr, but I think we're waiting for actual confirmation. Although I can tell you it's widely reported that there is a report that it's happened. I can't tell you that it actually has happened yet. So you always like to clarify on that. That Kenneth Starr may still have his job right now and is just hearing the report the same as you and I are. Like, really? I was fired? I didn't hear that.
Right.
But I honestly believe that is probably the case the way it is being so widely distributed right now.
Coming up next, we're going to hear from Mike Mendoza. He's the new Boise State wrestling coach. And coming up on Thursday at Boise State, if you've thought of getting season tickets for football this fall, join Caves and Prater for the Select a Seat open house. It's at Albertson Stadium Thursday from 3 to 6. View, sit in, select, and purchase season tickets for this season while testing the view from the available locations. Just enter Albertson Stadium through the Allen Noble Hall of Fame Gallery and look for Caves and Prater. Go on the blue turf for field goals and pictures with Buster and members of the Boise State Spirit Squad. We'll see why the Broncos hired Mike Mendoza. Quite a story coming from Cal State Bakersfield. That's next when the Bob and Chris Show continues on Sports Radio The Ticket.
Always want to be a leader? We'll follow you. Follow us on Twitter at KTIK 93.1 FM. From the DataTel Studios, this is Sports Radio The Ticket.
Newest coach at Boise State, Mike Mendoza. He will head the wrestling program. He joins us on the Bob and Chris Show. Rick Worthington sitting in for Chris today. Coach Mendoza, congratulations on being named Bronco wrestling coach.
Thank you.
Well, why don't we first of all ask you the question. What attracted you? You were the head coach at Cal State Bakersfield in the Pac-12 for wrestling, like Boise State. What did you see in Boise State that said, you know what, I want to switch there?
You know, I think it actually started quite a few years ago. It might have been about 10 years ago, coming back to compete against Boise State, and just arriving in Boise, you just get this good vibe of the community support. It's not something I really really planned on or thought would happen 10 years later, but just thought, man, this would be a great place to coach. You just get the sense of the community support and just a great institution. And so when I was in Boise 10 years ago, I remember just telling my wife, man, this would be a great place to coach, and just left it at that. And about 10 years later, you know, the job opens up, and same thing. I tell my wife, man, this could be. Now I'm from Wood. Now it's a could. This could be a great place to coach. And just applied and got the job. And then now it's going to be a great place to coach. I mean, there's just a lot of things that attract you to Boise, you know, just besides just a great community, but just a great rich history of wrestling tradition there. So that's pretty much what attracted me.
Coach, as you mentioned, there is some tradition in this program. People have done a lot of good things for the wrestling program. So you come in when you have an opportunity to try and make things bigger and better. Where do you start?
Well, the first thing for me is getting to know the guys, and then getting to know me and start building that relationship and put together a plan of road to recovery and build the program. So it's first step is getting to know these guys and then getting to know me and building that relationship.
Coach, how did you do it at Bakersfield? If I'm not mistaken, the program was either dropped or was just about dropped, and you took it to the top 25. How did you do that?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's what happened. The program was announced discontinued. We had good guys transfer out, a couple of guys that went on to be All-Americans at other places. And so good guys transferred out and no recruiting class, and it's kind of a recipe for a tough road to hoe, and it was. So, but the way to turn around is just start a culture of a guys that want to do big things and want to be the best wrestler they can be, and guys who want to take care of business and academically and graduate, and then focused on really those two things and building that culture and providing the environment to ensure their success. And you bring in guys that have that like-minded, thought process, and you just put a focus on it. And so it takes building a culture and bringing in guys and developing them. And, that's a simple process of how it was done.
Mike Mendoza was named the wrestling coach at Boise State on Friday, getting a chance to visit with him here on Sports Radio The Ticket on the Bob and Chris Show. Rick Worthington sitting in for Chris today. Coach Mendoza, having coached in this Pac-12, you've seen Boise State, you've seen the competitors. How much of an edge is it for you that your next job is in this conference as opposed to if you went to some other conference?
I think having a little bit of inside information, so to speak, with the other coaches and the other programs. You know, I mean, obviously, on the Western region, so you're recruiting against these same guys, and so I think that's important. You kind of know know your enemies, but know your rivalries, I guess. And so I think that's it's a plus for me.
Coach, I want to ask about community involvement. I know that one of the things that is great about Boise, and I'm sure you've seen this already, is that there are good young wrestling programs all over the city. Meridian, Boise have all got really good wrestling programs and things that go on, you know, off season as well for some of these guys as well. Are there ways to involve Boise State in the community for some of the younger guys that are just coming up and wanting to learn?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of great wrestling in Boise and so many resources. Just, you know, it's 5 days on the job now, and it's just amazing, you know, talking to some of the guys, some of the parents, some of the supporters, some of the alumni that are in the community, and just finding out how great the resources right there in that town and really not far from it to help build that program. But I'm amazed. And certainly, you know, we want our Boise wrestlers to be in the community, and they're going to be leaders. A lot of guys look up to them. A lot of high school kids are going to be looking up to these, you know, college wrestlers. They're going to be kind of their idols, so to speak. And so being out in the community and them knowing us, is going to be real important.
Coach Mike Mendoza joining us here on the Bob and Chris Show. Coach, what do you think the greatest need heading into your first season is for the wrestling team and wrestling program?
Well, I think the biggest need is establishing a culture, and sometimes that takes time. You know, I don't know the guys there coming into a new situation, so we got to get to know each other real quick. And, you know, there's got to be, you know, kind of an established culture, and I got to, you know, it comes from not just the coaching staff, but it comes from the team too. And so it's something that we want to establish as quickly as we can. So, you know, to me, that's the biggest need is establishing the right mindset, the right culture, so that when we're working, you know, we're working together as a team. And when that happens, that's when things can happen quickly.
Mike, what's the recruiting calendar in wrestling? I mean, you get hired here at the end of the school year, end of May, basically by the time you take over, it's going to be almost June 1 for this season. Is recruiting done? Are you looking for the 17-18 season, or can you do some recruiting now?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's both. I mean, we're really, you know, we're always recruiting for the time ahead, but there's still some recruiting to do right now. I know that Coach Meeks is on staff, and he's handling some of that and getting caught up, and I know he's got a couple guys that he's looking at and I think looking to get commitments from, but it's still definitely somewhere. I'm going through the roster. I mean, this is day five for me, so going through the roster and doing a depth chart and talking to the guys and getting a sense of where guys are going to be at and see where our needs are is what I'm doing right now. And, definitely recruiting is for this year and for next year.
Coach Mendoza, thank you so much for spending a few minutes with us. We appreciate it and wish you the best on coming to Boise State as head wrestling coach.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to it.
And that is Mike Mendoza, new Boise State wrestling coach, only the third coach in 44 seasons. It's been a very stable program wrestling-wise at Boise State.
I like the wrestling program. I have a little guy coming up that likes to wrestle. It's his sport. It, you know, where his brother plays baseball, the other little Worthington wrestles. And so he's really started to pay attention to some things that have been going on with Boise State's program. So I had to get that in. It's like, hey, can you get the kids in, Coach? And the other thing is, can you teach Dad what's right and wrong about wrestling? Because I really don't know. Unless it was, you know, coming off the turnbuckle. I don't know about it. So I'm trying to learn. Trying.
So again, Mike Mendoza, the new coach, comes from Cal State Bakersfield, where he was the head coach there. And this past season, the Roadrunners were 11-4. We had news from the NFL meetings. Atlanta is going to host the Super Bowl in 2019. Beating out New Orleans in the final vote. The two Florida cities, Miami and Tampa, were eliminated prior to the final vote. And now it looks like it's South Florida and Tampa going against each other for the next Super Bowl, which they will award for 2020. Rather go to Miami or rather go to Tampa?
I guess Miami. I don't know. I've never been to Florida. I don't know, except that it's humid, it's hot, and they have gators there. And that's as much as I know. At least if I go to Miami, it seems like it's bigger. But then you got, you know, Universal Studios and you got Walt Disney World. I don't know. I'm torn. I don't have a preference.
Having been to Florida multiple times during the years,
yeah,
multiple months, January or February is a great month to be in Florida.
Yeah, I could see that being a good spot.
Went to my nephew's wedding a couple years ago in July. Not a great time to go to Florida.
No, that's a bummer. But February you can do.
Okay. Coming up on June 1st, we're going to be out at Dave and Buster's. You can meet some of your all-time favorite Boise State football players with Sports Radio The Ticket at Dave and Buster's. Again, it's Wednesday, June 1st from 5 until 7. Boise State is honoring the best players of the last 30 years on the blue. Meet some of your favorites like Nick Schleckaway, Lance Sellers, Marty Tadman, Joe O'Brien, and Ryan Winterswijk. They'll be there, and many more as well. Caves and Prater will be broadcasting live that day from 3 to 6. I'll be joining them as well from 5 to 7. It's all at Dave and Buster's on Milwaukee, Wednesday, June the 1st. We'll be back with more of the Bob and Chris Show. Up next, it's Quick Hits. Today marks a special day. We'll find out what's so special about today next on the Bob and Chris Show on Sports Radio The Ticket.
This is Jim Rome. I talk to the biggest names in sports every single day, and they're all right here on your original home for the jungle, Sports Radio 93.1 FM, 1350 AM, The Ticket.
93.1 The Ticket presents Quick Hits with Bob and Chris. The topics other shows with Bob and Chris don't miss. Topic number one.
All right, Rick, today is a special day. Why?
Today marks 100 days until the college football season begins. September 1st, that's when you can really start chalking it up. There is one game before that, but it's really not week one. Week one comes just a few days later. So you don't have to wait a full 100 days for football to start. You'll get preseason even before that for NFL. But 100 days until you'll get to see college football, and that includes Boise State.
And I think the start of the college football season, before there was just a smattering of games that really mattered, some kickoff classics. But I think in the last several years, maybe since the advent of the college football playoff, it seems to be that the opening round has been a lot stronger with caliber games of big-time teams against big-time teams. And this year doesn't look any different.
Topic number two.
Staying on the same topic here, Bob, what game that first weekend of college football are you most looking forward to?
Oklahoma and Houston. They're going to play at the Texan Stadium in Houston, so the Sooners will travel to a game against a non-Power 5 team, although it will not be on the Cougars' home field on campus, but will be in town. Oklahoma's 11-2 last year, lost in the playoff to Clemson. They've got quarterback Baker Mayfield back. Houston under second-year coach Tom Herman. They were 13-1 last year. They went to a New Year's Six Bowl. They bombed Florida State in that game. Greg Ward is back at quarterback for them. Both guys accounted for about 4,000 yards. Mayfield threw for 3,700, ran for another 405 to get to 4,000, and Ward passed for almost 3,000 and ran for over 1,000 to get to his 4,000. We will see. If Houston wins this game, they will have a shot maybe to be a non-Power 5 team in the college football playoff if they can run the table.
There are several really good games. I'll highlight USC and Alabama will play opening weekend, and they're going to do it in Jerry's World. What could be better than that? LSU versus Wisconsin, Clemson at Alabama, BSU at Louisiana Lafayette that weekend as well.
Topic number three.
All right, Rick, talking about college football, 100 days to go to it. What player are you most looking forward to seeing that opening weekend?
I think the obvious answer is Christian McCaffrey. I want to see if he can repeat his tremendous season with Stanford. And can he do it again? Because a lot of people said, well, he's so little, he can't keep that thing up. But I'm telling you right now, that kid is special. How special remains to be seen this coming season, though.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing this year's Brett Rippon at Boise State. I want to see how much he has developed in the offseason. I think a lot of times your most improved year is from your freshman year to your sophomore year, especially when you play as a freshman. He threw for over 3,300 yards, completed 64% of his passes, 20 touchdowns, 8 interceptions. But of those 8 interceptions, 6 of them came in 2 losses, Utah State and New Mexico. I'm looking for big strides for Rippon this year, and that's who I'm looking forward to seeing most this season.
I like what you had to say there, and actually I'm on board with you on this one. Watching what Rippon could do this upcoming season really sets the course for Boise State.
Topic number four.
All right, I'm going to ask you one more college football question. What team is your team to watch in college football this upcoming season?
For me, it has to be Clemson. They were the runner-up to Alabama in the national championship game. They return quarterback Deshaun Watson, probably the leading contender, along with the aforementioned Mr. McCaffrey of Stanford for the Heisman. They will open their season at Auburn. They probably should be favored in that game, although it is tough to go on the road to an SEC team. Other than Auburn, they pretty much play just an ACC schedule. Doesn't look that taxing. If they get by Auburn, I think Clemson very easily could run the table and find themselves back in the college football playoff once again.
I like where you're at with that. I think this might be the year that we see LSU break out. They've got a great running game. They've got a returning offensive line that's terrific. I know you like to tell me, well, LSU's never had a quarterback. Well, neither has Alabama, and they still find ways to win too. Bama, though, should be down this this year. This could be the year that LSU springs to the top with a great running game and a powerful defense.
Quick Hits with Bob and Chris on 93.1 The Ticket.
100 days to the start of the college football season. A lot of great games in week one, as we mentioned. And I think that with TV, with the sites like the Packers are hosting the LSU-Wisconsin game.
That's a good
the,
one.
The Texans are hosting the Oklahoma-Houston game. As you mentioned, the Cowboys are hosting USC-Alabama. I think there's more good games early in the season than there used to be.
This is what college football needs. You've got some marquee teams facing each other at some nice venues. Did you mention that the LSU game versus Wisconsin is at Green Bay? It's going to be held at Lambeau Field. Yeah, that's exactly what college football needs to get its foot in the door and kind of kick it down that first weekend of September. I'm anxious to see if Fournette can put it together. I mean, he ran for 1,900 yards last year and some change, 300 carries, 22 teeters. I mean, I'm telling you, if LSU, if they've got the offensive line and can just throw a little bit, that guy could be another 2,000-yard runner.
I find it interesting that it looked like at the end of the season last year that Les Miles was going to be fired. And he somehow survives.
Why would you want to fire
that guy? Well, no, I didn't say that, but it sure looked like they were going to.
You're right.
And he could end up, if the cards come down as you suggest that they could, and they certainly could, he could have gone from maybe being a day away from being fired to winning a national championship if they're that good.
Can I give you one other team here that I'm just so interested to see? I mean, it's a story that everybody will understand. What can Jim Harbaugh do with another full year at Michigan with the kind of talent that he continues to bring in? The Michigan Wolverines will start the season in the top 20 for sure. I just am really, really anxious to see if now with that kind of attitude and that kind of recruiting and a quarterback that knows how to do something, if he'll get that team over the hump, and by that I mean Urban Meyer and the Buckeyes, if they'll finally kick down that door and start that rivalry anew. It's not a rivalry until you win a couple of games, right?
Correct. But I think right now, though, Michigan, Ohio State, you know, what you've seen over the last few years of Wisconsin, I think the Big Ten is running about as good as they've run in a long time as a group.
Ohio State, Michigan State, and Michigan.
Mm-hmm. They're all Eastern, in the same division.
They're all in the East. I mean, they all won 10-plus games last year. I mean, poor Iowa, Wisconsin, Nebraska, Purdue, Northwestern, I guess they were pretty good last year. Interesting. Looking forward to some football. Jonesing for it.
When we come back in hour number two, we're going to find out what Kurt Apsey thinks he looks for when he hires a coach. He just hired one in Mike Mendoza. He was a guest on Bronco Tuesday. We'll pick out some of the highlights of that when we come back on Sports Radio The Ticket.
These guys know sports.
Most of the time.
Bob and Chris, the voices of Boise State Athletics. Bob Beeler and Chris Lewis on Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 AM, The Ticket.
The NFL seems to have a pattern going as they award Super Bowls today for the next few seasons. We already knew that this season it would be in Houston, which would technically be 2017, and next season would go to Minnesota. Atlanta wins for the 2018 season, which would be 2019. South Florida for the 2019 season, which would be 2020. And L.A. wins for the 2020 season, which would be 21. Minnesota, Atlanta, and L.A., San Francisco or Santa Clara on the back end last year, all get it in their second years. The league wants you to get your bugs out of the stadium in the first year of existence of the stadium, and then they'll give it to you in the second year. It seems like it's just been about a lock. Atlanta, South Florida, L.A., the next three coming up with the awards for 2019, 2020, and 21.
The NFL has been pretty gracious about teams that get new stadiums. We want to put the biggest game in your venue. And I think it's a good plan by the NFL to reward the fans, reward the owners, and reward the city for a job well done in helping keep the NFL top of everybody's mind. And clearly the NFL is still king, right? And the NFL is still king.
the rooms they showed inside on the NFL Network, the, I don't know if it's the ownership groups or the front office staff, sitting around a boardroom, and the shot was the same at all of them. I would have liked to have seen the shot immediately on the announcement of the team that didn't get it. Like you saw Atlanta and everybody's high-fiving each other and hugging each other. I would have liked to have seen what it looked like in the New Orleans group room when they didn't get it.
I wonder,
and then Tampa didn't get it, and they show you the South Florida one, and they're high-fiving each other, and then you see the Rams. I don't know who was the finalist against them.
Well, you know why they're high-fiving, though. I mean, it's not just because they get to host the Super Bowl. It's because there's some serious dollar bills that come along with that. I mean, you don't just get to host the game. There are a ton of things that it means for your community, and it's got to mean a bunch of extra dollars, not just to the team, but to scatter about through the staff as well. And if you're the owner and you get the Super Bowl at your stadium, yeah, there's some money there. Good for them.
Before we got to Quick Hits, we visited with Mike Mendoza. He is the new coach at Boise State for the wrestling program. He was named on Friday, and he's starting to get to work, looking at recruiting, looking at, as he said, building a culture for wrestling at Boise State. So we wish him well. Kurt Apsey was on this morning's final Bronco Tuesday. It airs every Tuesday on sister station KBOI. It's hosted by Paul J. Schneider and myself. Thought we hit a couple of the highlights from Boise State's athletic director. And very apropos, talking about a new coach, that being Mike Mendoza. They just went through the recruiting process and the hiring process to bring Coach Mendoza on board. We asked Kurt Apsey, the AD, what they look for just in general when you're looking for a coach.
Well, I think in the beginning you always have your short list of all the sports. I think you've got to be ready if someone decides to leave or, you know, we decide to make a change. And, you know, for me, right off the bat, and it's not just coaches, I want a good fit. I want someone who's a good person, high level of integrity, character, who's going to get along with our staff. You know, our coaches lean on our staff a lot to get their job done. And you got to be able to want to work with these people. And so for me, right off the bat, that initial visit is just kind of getting to know the person. And so a good fit for the department is something that's real important for me. I want to, if it's possible to hire someone who's been a head coach, I would certainly like to go that route because it is different. It certainly was for me, being a senior associate and then stepping into the AD role. You think you know everything until you're actually in the seat, and it's a little different for sure. But, you know, have they done that before? That's not, at the end of the day, the end all, but it's important at least that we have a chance to consider someone who maybe has had that experience already. I also look at where they've been and if they've had a chance to see what success looks like. I think that's really important. Have you actually been around a program that's won and does it the right way and is a part of a culture that's about growing kids and making them better? And, you know, real important also on top of that is, have they been at a place that their teams have been successful academically? Are they graduating kids? Do they care about APR?
And those were just three or four things that Kurt Apsey mentioned that you look for in a head coach. He has now had, since he's been on since last summer, he has been overseeing two hires, and he kind of got a little bit of both. He gets Mike Mendoza, the head coach from Cal State Bakersfield, somebody that has had head coaching experience, somebody that comes from a program that's won. For the swimming and diving program that he made the hire with last summer, he went to a program that was very, very successful, but he went for a top assistant, Jeremy Kipp, the coach coming from USC to Boise State. So I think, you know, three or four different criterias of what you're looking for when you choose a head coach and you try to balance and find the right fit, as he said, when you make the pick.
Here's what you don't want to do. I like everything that Kurt Apsey said right there. One of the things that drives me nuts about athletic directors, they want to make a splash. They want to win the press conference. They're going for the big name guy, not necessarily a guy who's won recently, not a guy that's necessarily dedicated to the craft or building a program up, but they want to look good in the process of hiring that guy. And you never heard anything like that with Kurt Apsey. He's interested in the process, in growing kids, in keeping their GPAs and what do you call it, APR?
That's the academic progress rate.
Thank you. There are all these priorities. This is what I want out of a head coach. There's a recipe that's in place. You just sprinkle in a little bit of wrestling or a little bit of swimming or, you know, God forbid we have to worry about sprinkling a little football or basketball in there, but I'm saying there's a recipe and it's worked out.
He also talked about some of the challenges that face Boise State heading into the future right here in Boise.
Well, rising costs in athletics are something that, you know, all institutions are being faced with right now, and we're certainly not an exception to that. We've got cost of attendance that you obviously both know about that was a big challenge for us this year, and just balancing the budget going forward. And the one thing I will say is I think that our staff and our coaches are doing a great job in terms of just spending money wisely. You know, I think there's two ways you have to look at your budget going forward. One is make sure that the money that you do have is being spent the right way, and then make sure that you're putting together a plan that allows you to raise the money that you need to not only just cover uncontrollable costs that come our way and, you know, annually, but, you know, what do we have to raise to continue to get better? And so first you've got to get to that zero mark, and then you've got to say, okay, what else do we need and how do we get there? And so spending the money wisely and then having a solid plan going forward in terms of raising money is part of the challenge.
It was Kurt Apsey on the biggest challenge facing the Boise State Athletic Department. You're listening to the Bob and Chris Show on Sports Radio The Ticket. Rick Worthington sitting in for Chris today, and Kurt appearing on Bronco Tuesday over on 670 KBOI this morning. Biggest challenges, I think, in virtually every athletic department is the rising costs. Costs of attendance, scholarship costs going up. Everything seems to be going up. The cost of salaries, the cost of facilities. And I think that's the greatest challenge, probably for the Power Five, but certainly for the non-Power Five out there to try to keep up with the highest levels of football that seem to be getting the most money from television, the most money from ticket sales.
Here's the one area where I don't have any idea what it cost. I don't have any idea what it cost to put a football program together and put a good enough football program together where you garner the type of revenue that can help float a lot of other programs as well. I mean, if it's hard right now when you still are going to good bowl games and getting television money, just think how hard it would be if those things weren't in place. So I don't like to just point and say, hey, thank the football program for everything that's going on right now. But, you know, in the athletic world, you got to have money coming in, and there's a breadwinner.
Two seasons ago, football had four 10-win teams in the Mountain West. Also, numerous teams went to the NCAA tournament. This year, not the case. We asked Kurt also about how the Mountain West can get better across the board so it can compete stronger with conferences like the American.
Well, you got to win. There's no doubt about that. I think scheduling becomes really important there. You know, there's some formulas that the ADs and the presidents in our conference have talked about in terms of scheduling and, you know, how strategic you get. But at the end of the day, I mean, you got to win. Every once in a while, you've got to go play that big road game and get a win. And so you have to win those games that you're supposed to win, and then every once in a while, you've got to win that game maybe that you're not supposed to win. And so scheduling, I think, is really important for our conference and making sure that you're doing it in such a way where you're not, you know, going up against a Notre Dame every week. You know, some coaches and administrators in the past have basically said, hey, we're gonna go play anybody. And I think that's hurt some of those schools. I think we've done a really good job at Boise State of scheduling the right way and also trying to make it attractive enough so people will still buy tickets to Albertson Stadium and come watch us. So winning games, scheduling, I think is really, really important.
And when you talk about that, Boise State's done a pretty good job of it, but we need other teams in the Mountain West to get those wins. We've talked about some of the big games in the month of September. You need to win some of those games, cross-sectional games against other conferences for football and basketball, the months of November and December, when you're playing non-conference games or tournament games. You need to win some games. I'm thinking the year Boise State went back to Creighton, they were unbeaten. You win that game, and not to say that you didn't do a whole lot of other good things during the regular season, but that was sort of the win you hung your hat on with the NCAA selection committee. You said, hey, we beat Creighton on the road. How many teams did that? And you end up getting yourself an NCAA at-large pick that year.
You know, here's the thing. It depends on who you ask what smart scheduling is. So let's look at week one, for instance. There's a couple of games here that you look at and go, okay, I don't know if this is smart scheduling, but, I mean, you've got Nevada going to play at Notre Dame this year. Mm-hmm. Nevada's on the down. Notre Dame's on the up. And this is, by the way, the second time in recent memory that a team like Nevada has played at Notre Dame. They got housed the first time, and I think that's when Kaepernick mm-hmm. was there. Well, they're going to get housed at Notre Dame, and they're going to get housed bad, okay? Yeah, it's a great payday when you go and you play on Saturday and you're on NBC and you get everybody on the planet to see you just get your butt kicked bad. That's a payday. But some will say that's smart scheduling because we need the revenue inside our athletic program. Boise State doesn't think in those terms in all cases. We're scheduling some Pac-12 opponents. We're scheduling Washington. We're scheduling Washington State. We're scheduling Oregon State. We're scheduling the bottom tier of the Pac-12. You know, I think that's smart in a number of different ways. You're still going to play a major conference opponent, and you're going to play someone regionally, that makes sense, but you're not trying to take on USC in their own backyard. That's smart scheduling, in my opinion.
When I'll come back, I'll talk a little more about scheduling, and then we'll also look at why some people might not want to compete in the Olympics, and one of them is a big name. That's next. Bob and Chris Show continues on Sports Radio The Ticket.
You're on Facebook anyway, right? Search Sports Radio The Ticket for videos, stories, poll questions, and more from the DataTel Studios. This is Sports Radio The Ticket.
Talking college football schedules, 100 days to the start of the college football season. Bob and Chris Show, Rick Worthington sitting in for Chris on Sports Radio, The Ticket. The point I wanted to make about schedules, you're talking about, well, you kind of want to schedule some people that maybe have some, you know, good value, good names, but maybe aren't at the top of their peak where you can have a chance to go in and beat them. I think one of the things that makes football scheduling more difficult than a lot of other sports, you schedule games 10 years out. Mm-hmm. Somebody that you schedule that you think, wow, these guys may be really, really good, might not end up being that good in 10 years, or vice versa. Think of some people that may have scheduled Boise State 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, you get this team that beats Oklahoma in the Fiesta Bowl and then runs off the number of wins they did under, you know, the 50 wins under Kellen Moore. I mean, that may not be what you bargained for. You might have thought, oh, here's a school from the WAC. It's not
You're not wrong.
Be. You know, so how you think somebody's going to be 8-10 years from now, like I look at Washington State, I think they're going to have one of their better teams this year that they've had in a long time. They've got a good quarterback that's back, that throws the ball all over the yard. I mean, they won 9 games last year. They've got the core of their team back. Oregon State last year did not win a Pac-12 game. They're probably weaker. Boise State played them a couple years ago in the Hawaii Bowl. That Oregon State team certainly better than the one that they put on the field last year. So sometimes you end up getting a tougher opponent than you think, and sometimes it's weaker.
You roll the dice a little bit. Does Boise State still have Florida State on the schedule mm-hmm. in the coming mm-hmm. years? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a tough one.
I just looked that up. They announced that in 2013, and they'll play, looks like, 2020.
I mean, you would expect Florida State to be amongst the leaders in the ACC when yeah. that game is played. I guess it's possible that all of a sudden, you know, something happens and they go in the tank, but you doubt it.
You know, when they put the Georgia Bulldogs on the schedule originally, I said, wow, that's gutsy. That's a good game to get. You got to go down there and play, but that's a, you know, that could be a statement game for you, and I like that. When they went to Virginia Tech, I said, there's a statement game, a chance to go down and beat Beamer on their, you know, and getting a game like Washington at home last year with Coach Pete, that was great for a number of reasons. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think you schedule smartly, and getting Pac-12 teams I think is really, really smart because you'll get a crowd for that. People will want to watch, you know, Washington State here. People will want to watch Washington when they're here, even if Coach Pete's not there. That's a game that you want to watch. So I think they've done a good job scheduling ahead. That game of Florida State, I shake my head out a little bit and go, I don't know if I want that game or not.
But yeah, you do. Yeah, you do. Michigan State's going to be coming here in a few years.
Yeah.
I've seen Oklahoma State on the list. Cincinnati's on the list. I mean, you could get, you know, Michigan State 5 to 10 years ago probably wasn't as good as they are now. Now they're a college football playoff team.
I don't think you want that game every single year because you can throw the dice a few too many times in trying that game. Look, Fresno State's going to go to Nebraska, and we know what's going to happen there. Nevada's going to go to Notre Dame. We know what's going to happen there. I mean, there are several big versus Little on the road, and you know what's going to happen in that. Boise State's been able to weather those. I don't think you shake the dice every year on that game, but I think you have to put yourself out there occasionally.
But you also don't shake that dice every week. You don't have those teams back to back to back to back. Like, I think sometimes no risk, no reward.
Yeah.
I mean, Notre Dame hosted Nevada when Kaepernick, I believe, was a senior. And I thought that Nevada was going to give them a very good game because Notre Dame was, I think, early in the Kelly era there in South Bend. And I think it was, what, 35-0? It was a blowout for Notre Dame. And I didn't expect that. I thought Notre Dame would give them a – I mean, I thought Nevada would give Notre Dame a much better game than they did.
You and me both.
But sometimes, you know, you got to roll the dice. I mean, I would think if you're a fan base – and you have a chance. Your team plays Notre Dame. Now, Nevada's going to do it twice in about a six-year period. But if you're going to Notre Dame or going to one of those places, Michigan, I mean, I don't think many people thought that Appalachian State, an FCS school that year, would go into Michigan and win the game, even though Michigan maybe was under Lloyd Carr, wasn't, or was it Holt? No, it was Carr, I think, at the time.
Yeah, I think you're right.
It was Carr. Wasn't as good as they have been.
Yeah.
But still, you don't expect App State to go to Ann Arbor and win the game.
No, and like I say, I think you need to put yourself out there against great competition occasionally. In the case where Boise State is concerned, yes, I would put one of those games on the schedule. Every year, I would put a game like that on the schedule, and I would try and have a few of those here in our own backyard. But I would not want to put three of those games on my schedule if I really wanted to be serious about contending for a top 20 or a top 15 program.
And if you're looking at it from the Power Five's point of view, they like a lot of home games.
Yeah.
Maybe they aren't even interested in coming to your stadium. If you're not Power Five and you're not somebody that seats 90,000, it's not going to be a huge made-for-TV event.
You know, that would be an awesome question for Mr. Apsey. How hard is it to get teams to put Boise State on the schedule with the reputation that this team has had for being, you know, a giant slayer? How hard is it to, even if we'll go and play at your place, how hard is that to get Boise State on the schedule when?
I think a lot of them would say they'd rather tangle with somebody else, absolutely.
I think you're right.
Absolutely.
They'd rather pay somebody else to come.
And you wonder how long the conversation would go with some of these on, we want a home and home.
Yeah.
I mean, let's say Nevada. You're on the phone with Notre Dame. You're dickering with them for the game in South Bend. Well, instead of giving us money, how about you come to Reno? 1,001, 1,002, how long before you hear a click?
Yeah. I don't even think. You want us to do what? All right. That's enough with the punchlines. Come on.
You drive home on State Street and go right past Burger and Brew. We'll stop in for a change and see Caves and Prater for some happy hour action. That'll be Wednesday from 3 to 6 as they broadcast Idaho Sports Talk live from Burger and Brew. That's on State Street and on Sports Radio The Ticket. They're going to be out from Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. So good job by them getting out and about.
You know, this is funny. You were talking about Notre Dame. They don't do that where we're going to go play at your stadium in front of your crowd. They say instead, let's do, you know, the Irish tour. Let's go play in Ireland. Oh, let's go play in Yankee Stadium. You know, we'll take that game. We'll play you, but we're going to play, you know, at Wembley. You know, they do ridiculous things at Notre Dame. Because they're Notre Dame and they could get away with it. So, yeah, they're not going to play at Nevada anytime soon. And I wouldn't expect them to come to Boise State, honestly, and play in front of 30,000 people or 35 or 40,000 people. They want 80,000 people and, you know, millions at home as well.
I think if I remember correctly, their schedule last year, I think, only had for Notre Dame a couple of true road games. They had a lot of games that were neutral site that, you know, maybe they'd play Navy. But it would be at the Ravens Stadium in Baltimore.
Right.
They wouldn't, even though it would be in Navy's backyard, they wouldn't physically go to your stadium. And a lot of it might be that they want to be able to sell more tickets. The Ravens Stadium probably seats 75 or 80,000 seats, where Navy Stadium, I've been there, I think seats 40 or 45,000.
Yeah, it's not big enough. Not big enough for Notre Dame anymore.
When we come back on the Bob and Chris Show, we are going to talk about the Olympics and why some people might not want to participate. But before we do that, let's give you a chance to win a Big Judd special. Two of them, in fact. world-famous one-pound burger comes with cheddar cheese, large fry. You can go to Big Judd's. They're now in Meridian in addition to Boise. And Boise, they are off of Protest Hill near Boise Ave and Meridian on Overland and Eagle Road. 424-9300, caller number 9. Eats at Big Judd's on Sports Radio The Ticket.
Don't have time to talk? Text us on the Commercial Tire text line at 424-9300. Sports Radio The Ticket.
Olympics coming up later this summer. Golf, one of the sports. It's sort of a trial sport. It's been in there a couple of times. May or may not continue past this Olympics. I guess it's guaranteed through 2020, but after that, it's not guaranteed. Baseball has been in a few Olympics and is now currently out. Bob and Chris show on Sports Radio The Ticket. When you look at some of the things going on with the Olympics schedule for later this summer in Rio, the Zika virus is something that a lot of people are very, very concerned with. McIlroy, the golfer, says he may skip the Olympics, with citing that as maybe one of the reasons why he might not want to go. I think when you've got sports that the be-all, end-all is not a gold medal, I think it's much harder to get people to want to participate in the Olympics. I think there's reasons that somebody is going to look to it. If you've trained all your life to be an Olympic swimmer and you're in your prime in the years that the Olympics are in Rio or in Seoul or Atlanta or wherever it is, you're going to want to go.
Yeah.
But if you asked a golfer, what's the pinnacle of your sport? Winning an Olympic gold medal is not going to be on the list.
No, it's nice. I mean, and honestly, I'm glad that Rory McIlroy and other golfers are still kicking around the idea of doing it, despite the fact that a gold medal doesn't mean as much in their particular sport, although it means something to them personally. They're taking some patriotic pride to it, and I appreciate that. But how familiar are you with the Zika virus? How much do you know about it?
Not too much, okay. Other than I know it's supposed to, I think, cause problems if you wanted to have kids, correct?
Abnormalities, specifically an enlarged head. So you'll have a child who's got a great big old melon. And it's just, I don't want to play it lightly. I'm not making jokes. It's scary. But the truth is, they don't know everything there is to know about the Zika virus yet. It affects women much more so than it does men. It can lie dormant in women. So if you were to be infected by a mosquito who has Zika virus, and that's how you get it, you get bitten by one of these mosquitoes down there, you could have it and not know it and then become pregnant, and then your child would be affected by it. You may or may not get sick in the process, and apparently it goes through men a lot faster than it does women. But I mean, that's scary if you're a woman and you're young, as some of these Olympians are, many of them are. You don't want to take a chance with that. You may have kids at one point, or you may still be thinking about it. But you don't want to have Zika virus keep you from having a family down the road, which hopefully to them is just as important as it is to you and I. So for Rory McIlroy, who is also a really young guy, still looking at, bringing up a family, I don't want to take that chance. Well, I don't blame him. I don't blame Hope Solo for saying that. I don't blame anybody from any other country for saying that. But there's so much about the virus that's not known right now for these Olympic athletes to step out and say, yeah, you know what, important, not that important. I'm okay with it.
And we'll see as we get closer to the games if any others decide to pull out.
Now, I totally understand if there is an older golfer out there, like, yeah, I don't mind taking that spot. Yeah, you may not ever have children again, and maybe that's okay with you, but there's some dangers out there.
So we'll see if he decides to play or not. Golf, not one of the more high-profile sports at the Olympics. I would say when you look, it's track and field, it's swimming and diving.
Summer
it's,
Olympics.
It's gymnastics.
Everybody's talking basketball here,
You think some of the NBA will pass on it?
I don't know, because there's an indoor sport. I mean, you don't have to ever be outside.
Yes, you do from going from the airport to the car. I mean, you have some risk.
Yeah, there's some risk
Olympic Village
to that as well. When you're playing golf, you're going to be out there for days at a time. I think your risk is a little bit greater. as an NBA player going from your hotel room to the bus to the arena and then staying in the arena, I think you can probably, you know, do a pretty good job mitigating your risk, where there are others that would not be able to. You imagine the soccer players out there. Mm-hmm. You spend 3 hours out there in the grass, sweating your tail off and skeeters all over the place.
Well, they did that last summer, right?
Yeah.
Or not
yeah.
last summer, 2 summers ago.
Yeah. But the risk wasn't as high.
Right.
I think there are a lot of people that not only do they not want to go play down there, but there's guys like you and I who would normally jump at an opportunity to go down there and watch some of those soccer matches that may now say, whoa, wait a minute, I don't want to take the risk either.
Thinking of buying a spa this weekend, Memorial Weekend, really the first start of summer, check out Caves and Prater at Snake River Pool and Spa on Orchard near Overland this Friday. Do some research, get details on all the special pricing that's coming up this weekend. Again, Caves and Prater live from Snake River Pool and Spa. Conference meetings going on, Pac-12 going on now. We have the NFL awarding Super Bowls. Again, the three that were picked for the NFL will be Atlanta, South Florida, and L.A. in that order. Pac-12 going on, reports out of their meetings. They want to curb court and field rushings in football and basketball. They're going to start putting price tags on it and fine the schools if they allow. And I don't know how sometimes you stop it, other than you better have a lot of security. Stop the court rushings or it's going to cost you money. I know the SEC already has it. And it's usually $25,000, $50,000 for the first offense, and it goes up from there.
Why are they fining the school? It's not the school's fault that kids are rushing the floor. I mean, is it because they're not offering enough security to stop it?
I would
it?
Think so. They're probably thinking that the home team needs to do something to dissuade their fans from coming on the field.
If kids decide they're going to run, they're going to run. I mean, You could have 100 security guards surround the court. And if kids get a big win and they want to go down there, you can't do anything about it. I mean, short of fencing the dang court, you can't stop that. I like the spontaneity of court rushing. I think it's fun. I understand why teams or why the NCAA don't want to support that. But, you know, it's... I shake my head because I say, is that really what your biggest concern is in the offseason? Is kid storming the court after a big win? I mean, sometimes court storming seems a little forced, but certainly not in all occasions.
I think
there are a lot of other things you could be worried about besides storming the court.
And you know? I do think what they are worried about is, I mean, besides somebody getting knocked down and stepped on, which would not be good, I think they're worried about somebody going up to somebody from the other team and saying something and then have an altercation between the visiting team and play and fans from the home team.
You're a little closer to it because when you're doing a game, you're right down on
for
the
basketball,
floor.
Yes.
Yeah. So your perspective might be a lot different, might be the same as coaches and or players. Where are you at on it?
Well, I've been involved in a couple of them, and where you are with the table – unless you have somebody, one of the times we had people going over the top of us, that was not fun. We got knocked off the air.
I believe
but
it.
For the most part, if they come out the, you know, down the steps in the way that they're supposed to come out, I haven't felt threatened. The one time we had a couple people try to go over the top of where we were sitting, and we kind of got knocked off.
Did you swing some elbows? Did you knock somebody down? Come on, did you man up on him, Bob?
I was trying to get back on the air.
See Beeler coming out, elbow sharp.
I was trying to stay on the air that day.
I would think that would have been your first job is yes to try and stay on the air and tell everybody what's going on.
Yeah,
and you know, maybe throwing a few frogs around might have helped.
Another thing the Pac-12 is talking about is they're trying to eliminate some of the late night games. Maybe taking some less money
for football or basketball.
For football. Pac-12, they're going to say that they're going to take one every 3 weeks and started earlier on the Pac-12 network.
Well, here's the problem with starting Pac-12 games so late at night. Nobody on the East Coast is ever going to see that thing. I mean, if it's 10 o'clock when you start that game, and some did start at 10 o'clock, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's 1 o'clock in the morning on the East Coast.
Oh, did they start it at 10 o'clock? I don't think they've started
was that
the game.
Maybe it was a Hawaii game that started as late at 10 o'clock at night, but still
here.
9.
Yeah, but not there. It wasn't a local. I don't know that. Has anybody kicked off past 9:30, 9 or 9:30? I don't think so. Monday Night Football used to kick off at 9:05 Eastern time. Now that's pro.
Yeah.
I don't know if – I can't say that I've ever remembered something that started past 9:20 or 9:30.
There's been some nights where I've sat watching football, and hopefully I'm not talking about a replay, but late at night, it's 9:30, 10 o'clock, and something's kicking off, and I just – maybe I'm talking about a game that was played in Hawaii, though. I just don't remember.
Yeah, but if you watch a game in the Pacific time zone here, a 9:30 start would be an 8:30 start locally, which we have a lot of 8:30, 8:35 games here.
Yeah, and that's fine. But I think for certain programs, you want exposure. Mm-hmm. You want to get your brand out there. And I know we've talked about brand before, but look, if you've got a good Oregon State team, if you're good, you want people in Florida and in Texas to see your team play because you want to be able to recruit there. And if it's too late for them to sit up and watch, even really big college football fans go to bed at some point, you know? Some of them even get up and go to church the next day even during football season. So you have to be at least in the back of your mind, you got to think, we're losing a great big audience by starting too late. I've thought that about Boise State and some of the nights that we've played. It's like, why are we here so late? You know, when it's 1 o'clock in the morning and we're still talking about, hey, the postgame show's just about ready to start. And then Bob Beeler goes on the air for another hour. No, I'm teasing you, Bob.
Yeah. No, I think that when you look at games, I think late start time's a problem, not just at Boise. I think the problem's everywhere.
And that it's television, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's really what it comes down to. And I understand that you want your television hours. You want to be on TV, but you still would like to have an East Coast audience.
And the networks, ESPN or the All Sports networks, they want a game from in the Eastern time zone from somewhere starting between 11 and noon in the morning,
right,
going till past midnight.
What's better? Is it better to start late at night for a West Coast team and know that you're getting, you know, on TV by yourself because you're on later in the evening and you won't have an East Coast crowd? Or is it better to compete with everybody else that's on in the afternoon and say that you're getting some viewers in Texas, some viewers in Florida, you're getting some eyes around the country? What's better? Own your time slot and be the only game on, or share
Are you putting any value on the people that are actually attending the game?
Well, I don't know.
I think the value in the attending is earlier in the day. You're going to get a better crowd. You're going to get more enthusiasm if your game's early. I also think
answer to that question has already been answered a number of times.
No, the TV doesn't
value
the studio.
Based on the idea of where our schedule is, you know. I say our, meaning Boise State.
I don't know. I'd like to know the number of eyeballs that actually watch at whatever time versus if you're splitting, you know, if you're splitting with, sometimes there's as many as five or six different games you can get at
once.
Right.
You're absolutely right.
Are you better off getting, just for sheer numbers, let's say every game gets across the country, gets a similar rating at the same time zone? That's not true. Like Alabama, LSU at the time zone is going to probably get a little bit better rating than, I don't know, Kansas against Kansas State.
Well, I think you're right about that. I think therein lies the answer. It depends who you're competing against and how good you are. Because where you'd like to have an audience all to yourself for all college football fans, we're the only game on, this is who you got to watch. If you're really, really good, you don't mind being on in the afternoon and having to compete against other teams because you're better than they are. And they'll want to watch you because you're so darn good. So, well, I think it depends where you're at as a program.
We want to congratulate Jeremy Philly. He won the Two Big Judd Specials. Congratulations to him. May is still going on, so a few more chances to win Big Judd Specials here on the Bob and Chris Show on Sports Radio The Ticket. Next month it rotates to the Idaho Sports Talk Show.
You and Chris and Todd sitting down in front of those great big giant Big Judd burgers. Who eats the most? Who eats the most? Is it Todd? Is it Chris?
I've not eaten with Todd. I've eaten with Chris. Chris would eat more than I would.
He would.
Those burgers are ginormous. I could barely make a dent to it, so...
How big is the big thing?
I'm pretty sure it's a 1 pound burger.
It's a 1 pound, but I heard for the contest they had two.
So it's a 2 pound burger.
Well, no, this is a one we're giving away.
Gotcha.
Yeah. No. Fantastic.
I've gone to Big Judd's and I've shared that burger with my parents. I mean, the three of us can eat it just fine. So me personally eating it, I would lose for sure.
It is big.
I've not had one. Is that wrong? I've been here in Boise like 4 years and I haven't had one of those yet.
Yeah.
It's wrong.
You're missing.
It's wrong.
I've been going there since it opened, I believe, in 1997 or so. So, yeah, definitely check it out, man.
But I've had In-N-Out Burger. Have you done that?
Yes, okay. I have.
All right, I can't. Yeah, I tried to one-up him. Didn't work.
Yeah, no, didn't work. When we come back, what's on our radar? Some big baseball games, some big basketball games, and even a big hockey game on tonight. That's next on the Bob and Chris Show on Sports Radio The Ticket.
This is Damon Amendolara of the DA Show. I'm talking about sports as it happens. Join me after Idaho Sports Talk on Sports Radio 93.1 FM, 1350 AM, The Ticket.
What's on the radar? Bob and Chris Show. Tomorrow we'll get a preview of the NCAA Track and Field Regionals held in Kansas. Boise State Coach Corey Immels will join us. Chris Lewis will be back on tomorrow's. A couple of pressing questions. Oklahoma City, Golden State tonight. Golden State backs against the wall. Hard to believe that. They're down 2-1. They need to tie. NHL playoffs tonight. Pittsburgh backs against the wall. They go to Tampa. Lightning with a chance to close them out. They are up 3-2. Some interesting baseball matchups tonight. Sale goes for 10-0 for the White Sox against Cleveland. And Matt Harvey, who struggled this year for the Mets pitching, goes against Steven Strasburg, who the Nats have won their last 13 decisions when he has pitched. And the Cubs and Cardinals playing. Cardinals won last night on a walk-off, and the Cubs struggling a little bit. They've lost 8 of their last 12, playing some of the better teams in the National League.
Paul J. is the biggest Cubs fan I know right now, and listening to him bellyache about the Cubs losing over the last week has been almost comedic.
Mm-hmm.
Love Paul J. Now, here's a guy that hasn't won a World Series in his lifetime, and that Cubs team might be the best team in baseball. They fall in a week, 2-week-long slump, and he's ready to give up the ghost on that team already.
Baseball, though, you expect it, right? I mean, you expect your team. You're a baseball guy. You expect the team to lose 8 out of 10.
You know that you're going to have those streaks during the year. You know that you're going to have an upswing, too, where you win, 10 out of 12 games. Some teams, it goes a little longer than that. Sometimes, you have one of those months where you only lose 3 games.
Like the Giants won last night. They won 11 of 12. And how they won on the way the pop-up dropped in is what happens when you've won 11 out of 12.
Right.
And if you're on a losing streak, that's exactly how you lose. Yeah. You lose a pop-up in the ninth inning.
Yeah. I think more than baseball tonight, I'll certainly pay attention to what goes on in Oklahoma City with Golden State there. Because this is the game that probably determines whether we're going to see a 7-game series or if we're going to wash this thing out next time they play. I just want to know if Golden State is affected because, I mean, remember we were talking the other day about Westbrook and how you put Westbrook on Curry and maybe that's the match? They've done a really good job switching off. It was Durant that was guarding up on Curry the other night, and Curry couldn't do anything over the top of him. Durant played him just fantastic defense played against Curry in that game. And then Klay was cold. So, I don't know. I'm anxious to see how this will turn out, but let's just assume for a minute that the Thunder win that game and take a 3-1 lead in that series. Folks, that's really impressive.
I think the NBA tonight is going to get their largest rating of the season.
I think you're probably right. Will you watch?
Yes.
I mean, you're not a big NBA guy, but
you
watch this
game,
right?
No, but I will watch this one tonight. Absolutely.
Who are you rooting for?
I'd like to see Golden State get it just because I've watched that team, a little bit this year from the
San
Bay
Francisco
Area.
Homer.
I can't believe that the Warriors are actually good. I mean, how many years have the Warriors been awful?
Forever.
Forever.
My entire lifetime.
And then all
lifetime.
Of a sudden they win the championship last year. To me, that was unbelievable.
I mean, there were some Run DMC years where they were pretty good. We had Mitch Richmond and Chris Webber mm-hmm. and Chris Mullen, and they were running like crazy. That was a fun team to watch.
For Bay Area fans, if I told you at the start of the playoffs that one Bay Area team was going to host a winter championship, what if I told you it was the Sharks and not the Warriors?
Yeah.
You wouldn't have probably bought that before the start of the playoffs.
Probably not. This team is fun to watch, though. If anybody could bounce back and win 3 games in a row, probably this Golden State team the way they shoot, right?
Mm-hmm. Jeff Cage joining us in studio. Jeff, I guess in studio today. You're going to be out quite a bit. We've talked about some of the different places you're hitting this week. So what's on the radar for today? And then we won't be seeing you face-to-face, but we'll be hearing you from various spots throughout the Treasure Valley the rest of the week.
That's right. I may be 5 pounds heavier when I see you guys next, but that'll be good. Today, though, we'll talk about the Pac-12 doing some things to adjust kickoff times for their fans, which I thought was interesting, plus televising college kids playing video games on their own network as they leverage themselves for more money for kids sitting on couches playing video games. It's pretty interesting. And, of course, we'll take a peek at tonight's game and implications of the suspension that didn't happen and get it all to it real quickly.
All right, looking forward to it. Matter of minutes, Idaho Sports Talk with Jeff Caves and Mike Prater.
Anthony Drimmick's okay with kids playing video games. Remember
he
Anthony?
He might be a top-notch competitor.
No, he was one of the top 10 in the world in League of Legends. League of Legends, that's it. He was a Pokemon guy, and a League of Legends guy. I remember. I know my Anthony Drimmick trivia.
Do you know Chris Lewis was a top 500 Madden player?
See, he just made that up. He wasn't really.
I don't know. We'll see.
Lewis said if he could beat me in Madden.
If we're going to televise this, maybe we have Chris play.
Okay, I'm down. I'll play Chris in Madden.
All right, he'll be back tomorrow. We'll be back tomorrow. Join us for another edition of the Bob and Chris Show, 1 to 3. Caves and Prater coming up next.